The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The views and opinions of the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii. This program was previously recorded and is sponsored by Dr. Health Radio.
Time now for Dr. Health Radio, radio's original health news magazine, bringing you the latest information on medicine, nutrition, fitness, and wellness, now in its 30th year. Your host of Dr. Health Radio is health expert David Snow, who is not a doctor, and while most of David's guests are doctors or authorities in their areas of expertise, they do not diagnose or prescribe on the air. If you have a condition or illness that requires medical attention, see a health professional. The information contained in this program is for educational and entertainment purposes only. And now, your host of Dr. Health Radio, the snowman himself, David Snow.
Well, you know what absenteeism is, but what is presenteeism? That's showing up for work when you're sick, even though you can't perform well. Being on the job while under the weather and ignoring your health can aggravate your condition, not to mention subjecting all your colleagues to whatever infection you may have. You know, that's the one thing about the one benefit, or I mean, there's other benefits, but or blessings in disguise, I guess, of the pandemic, and that is people are not going to work sick like they used to before because, well, for one thing, people call them out on it. Joe, you've been coughing all morning. Did you come to work and you're not well? Get out of here. You know, I mean, and rightly so. I mean, people should never come to work or be exposing others to their germs if they know they have a respiratory infection and you know, they're showing up for work anyway. And, you know, I know that, I mean, some people don't get sick leave or they don't get paid unless they go to work. But, you know, think of others, think of yourself, and health is your greatest wealth. So, yeah, you miss a day of pay, but you are also reducing your risk as well as others of any sickness. Anyway, get off my soapbox and get on with the show. This is David Snow on your radio, and we thank you so much for joining us and making us a part of your weekend, which we always hope to make strong and healthy with the information we have for you this morning. And it's one doctor's appointment that doesn't cost you a thing, so there's no insurance required. And the best part of all is you don't have to pull down your pants or take off your clothes for this painless injection of health information, which we give you each and every week at this time. It's your painless doctor's appointment, it is always Saturday mornings and Saturday evenings at 9 if you listen to the rebroadcast of the morning show. All right, in this hour of the program, a very important one, Dr. Scott Powers is with us, or will be in just a few minutes. He's an exercise physiologist at Stetson University in Florida, and he will be with us talking about exercising during the pandemic or not exercising during the pandemic, the consequences and benefits of either not exercising or exercising, and the benefits of fitness and reducing your risk of COVID as well as other viruses and infections, and how to recover faster if you do contract the virus. And we'll cover a lot of other benefits to exercise, not only just the immune system, but many other. I mean, it's just, you know, if there was a fountain of youth, the Ponce de Leon, if he discovered exercise, he would have found the fountain of youth, because it is indeed the fountain of youth more than anything else so far discovered to this day. And so anyway, Dr. Powers with us just a few short radio minutes after some news that you can use and our regular weekly features. Speaking of exercise, four great reasons to exercise, and we'll get into some of the others, but one is to boost your brain power. Older people who are fit experience few of those, you know, those tip on the tongue moments of, let's see, I can think of, I can't quite think of that, you know, and when your memory just isn't as sharp as it used to be. But compared with people, less fit people of the same age, they are much less likely to have, you know, the senior moments. And this is a study in the journal Scientific Reports. Also, living longer, walking at a brisk pace, or at least a fast pace, is associated with a 24% lower risk of dying from any cause, University of Sydney researchers say. And then supporting your gut, and we talk a lot about gut health here on the program, and our go-to probiotic is Theralac. But staying in shape is not just going to benefit your muscles, it also ups your odds of having the type of good bacteria that the gut helps the gut keep intestinal cells strong. That's according to San Francisco State University researchers. And of course, a healthy gut not only is good for good digestion and elimination, but also a positive impact on your mood and weight. Certain bacteria strains have been shown to improve weight loss. And then protecting your heart, that most people know that aerobic exercise is beneficial to the heart, but most people don't get enough of it. And as Dr. Powers will probably note later in the show, getting 150 minutes of exercise a week, that's kind of the standard, in middle age significantly reduces your risk of heart failure, according to Johns Hopkins medicine researchers. And inactivity over 6 years was linked to an increased risk of the condition. So, if you don't use it, you lose it, right? All right, let's shift from exercise to diet and some diet soda dangers, specifically kidney problems. Now, there's a twofold increase in kidney decline in people who drink soft drinks, diet soft drinks in particular. Metabolism, just one soda a day, is linked to a 34% higher risk of metabolic syndrome. And of course, this is American Diabetes Month, the month of November. And, metabolic syndrome is nothing more than pre-diabetes. It's not, you're not quite at that blood sugar level to where you're diagnosable as having diabetes, but, you're creeping up to it. Obesity also and it's ironic that diet soda can cause obesity, but the artificial sweeteners disrupt your body's ability to regulate caloric intake based on the sweetness of foods. It fools your body. And that's a whole other program which we've covered in more detail, but suffice to say that diet soda is not good for dieting. And problem two is that people, they'll order a Diet Coke along with their 400-calorie apple pie for dessert after their meal at whatever restaurant they're eating at. And then also reproductive issues, the soft drink cans. So it's not the ingredients in the soft drink itself, but the cans are coated with BPA, which, as you've probably heard and we've talked about on this show, have been linked to reproductive problems as well as heart disease and obesity. And then cell damage from diet sodas, the potassium and sodium benzoates, the preservatives that can cause damage to the DNA and the mitochondria of the cells, which are your powerhouses of the cells, and they inactivate them. And then finally, last but not least, rotting teeth. It's not just the sugar in soft drinks that makes it deleterious to your oral health, but also the artificially sweetened soft drinks that are maybe zero calories, so there's no sugar, but with a pH of about 3, I think it's 3.2, diet soda is very acidic, and the cola beverages are the worst offenders. They're even more acidic, but they might be light beverages, but they're not acid light, okay? And it's been shown that adults who drink 3 or more sodas a day have far greater tooth decay and more missing teeth and more fillings than those who do not consume soft drinks. So whether it's diet soda or sugar sweetened soda, stay away from all soft drinks. There's nothing soft about them. If you eat at the, not to disparage any one particular restaurant, but I couldn't resist the Cheesecake Factory's caloric count of some of their items, of some of their popular menu items. You just choose wisely or pick through it. Don't eat the whole thing. Take a doggy bag home. But the Bistro Shrimp Pasta, 3,100 calories. Folks, that's more calories than you need in a 24-hour period. Most, the average woman is what needs 1,800 calories, 18 to 2,000. 1,800 to 2,000, and then men about 2,500 or a little over 2,000. But anyway, that's equivalent to 5.5 Big Macs, or we don't have Olive Gardens here in Hawaii, but for those of you listening on the mainland, you do. That's 3 orders of Olive Gardens lasagna plus a side of tiramisu. And that's just one serving of Cheesecake Factory's Bistro Shrimp Pasta, which sounds pretty healthy, you know, the shrimp and the pasta, but, you know, that's not so much. All right, and my health tip of the week, and that is, and this has to do with diet and foods and nutrition, and that is that many of you recall the song Killing Me Softly, you know, Killing Me Softly with his song, Killing Me Softly. You know, well, now you know why I'm a talk show host and not a singer, right? But I think you remember that song, Killing Me Softly. Anyway, well, when you eat ultra-processed foods, which most fast foods and snack foods and many restaurant foods, for that matter, come under that banner or that category, you are killing yourself salty, fatly, and sweetly. Maybe not so softly, but remember, you may be killing yourself slowly but surely, so better to kill your desires and your decisions to eat these processed foods that will surely kill you, albeit ever so slowly. All right, okay. Let's go to the fitness file, shall we? Let's explode a myth out there, and I'm not sure if we'll have time to ask Dr. Powers about this, but is being too muscular unhealthy? Well, it's pretty much a myth, you know. You always hear, oh, that's not healthy. And when people are looking at a photo of a bodybuilder on stage or on a magazine cover or something. But ironically, but not surprisingly, those people are the same ones, you know, the ones that think that advanced muscle development is not healthy. They tend to have lower muscle development or lower levels of it, you know, smaller. And they don't even work out. So, you know, they're kind of like the armchair quarterbacks, right? But it's a myth that very muscled individuals have stiff muscles and joints. You know, I mean, granted, they can't get into a split like, say, a yoga practitioner, but neither can the average man off the street. So it's they might not have the range of motion, but they might not have had the range of motion anyway had they not lifted weights. And then having a lot of muscle has not been linked to an increased risk of any kind of disease. They say, oh, it's not healthy to be like that, the muscle phobic. They perceive V-shaped bodies as being unnatural and harmful. But and then furthermore, bodybuilders and physique athletes tend to have far healthier diets than do the average American out there, the average John. And so I don't know where this unhealthy idea comes from, but it is not not true. So I just want to bust that myth. What is that? Mythbusters? Yeah, that TV show. And, you know, muscles, having more of more muscles that boost your metabolism and your immune system, as well as increasing not only your muscular strength, but also bone strength and also aiding in weight loss. All right, let's go to matters of sexual health. Why a lover's touch can awaken desire. Let's talk physiology here. But first, if it's your birthday in November, you know your parents really enjoyed Valentine's Day, if you know what I mean. You get my 9-month drift there? Okay. All right. It turns out the nerve endings in our skin that respond to soft stroking also send signals to the brain that arouse sexual desire under the right circumstances. This is according to studies in both mice and people. For example, babies, we know that their heart rates slow when parents gently stroke their forearms. Well, now Columbia University has shown that these nerves may also kindle sexual desire in partners' touch. Do we need a study for this? I don't know. But University of Sweden, back in the 90s, they discovered see tactile nerves in human skin back in the 1990s. And people report erotic sensations when their forearms, inner thighs, necks, and foreheads are softly stroked at speeds known to stimulate these see tactile nerves in the skin. Well, conversely, people who undergo surgery where there is damage to the see tactile nerves, they're no longer able to experience erotic sensations when their skin is touched. Isn't that interesting? And touch may also be sensed as more erotic when couples are first together whereas it might signal security and comfort in more established couples. All right, so that's it for sexual health. When we come back, we'll have more on muscular health and fitness, as well as how exercise relates to susceptibility or not when it comes to COVID-19 infections and other respiratory and other body infections as well. My guest, Dr. Scott Powers, exercise physiologist, will come back with the Funny Bone Pharmacy next week, but we'll have valuable information for you the rest of the hour here on the Healthiest Hour on Radio.
Dr. Health Radio is brought to you in part by Natural Factors, where great health begins. Family-owned for over 55 years, Natural Factors has been bringing consumers the highest quality, safe, and effective nutritional supplements for healthier people and a healthier planet. Learn more at naturalfactors.com. And brought to you by Immune Health Basics, with formulas containing the clinically proven Wellmune ingredient. For info, go to immunehealthbasics.com.
Noni has been used by Polynesians and Hawaiians for over 2,000 years as their main medicinal plant. Now our new products bring the power of Noni fruit to you in a pleasant-to-use form. Noni fruit leather is made from pure, organic, unfermented fruit and offers relief for many health problems inside and out. Our soothing lavender Noni lotion helps with pain, skin ailments, and sports injuries. Noni fruit leather and lavender Noni lotion are available online or at most health food stores. Try our Noni lotion and fruit leather for improved health and energy.
The pursuit of a healthy immune system is so important for our long-term health. And being healthy for the long-term is everyone's goal, right? So which immune health supplement is recommended for those who also have cardiovascular concerns? Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Aged garlic extract, regarded as one of the leading natural heart health supplements, has been clinically proven to help reduce high blood pressure and inflammation. Experts believe this alleviates demands on the body's energy stores, freeing it up to fight invaders. The result? A more responsive immune system. Kyolic aged garlic extract begins with 100% organically grown garlic and is the most scientifically researched, highest quality, and best-selling odorless garlic extract supplement. And for extra support, get Kyolic aged garlic extract Immune Formula 103. Try Kyolic aged garlic extract for a healthy heart and a healthy immune system. Discover more at kyolic.com. That's KYOLIC.com.
When it comes to probiotics, why do employees, managers, and owners of health stores recommend and personally take Theralac more than any other brand? Results. Fast results. In fact, Theralac is the fastest-acting medicinal-strength probiotic. With patented stomach acid-resistant delivery, prebiotic stimulation, and guaranteed potency, Theralac restores regularity fast while providing all the long-term benefits of a superior probiotic supplement. Don't be fooled by probiotic products that promise higher potencies or more strains of beneficial bacteria. High potency means nothing without delivery, and more strains are not necessarily better. Theralac is optimally formulated for results. Theralac, the high-potency probiotic with guaranteed strength, delivery, and stimulation, supporting your digestion, regularity, and immunity. Theralac, available in the refrigerated section of your favorite health store. For more information, go to Theralac.com.
Yes, we are getting physical for the whole hour, not just for the fitness file, which is usually a two-minute feature of our show. By the way, here on Dr. Health, we talk about medicine that is preventative, curative, and palliative, but most of all, it's informative. And I have a very informative guest for you in there, out there in Radioland. He is Dr. Scott Powers, my guest today, an exercise physiologist at Stetson University. His research findings have resulted in new techniques and patient outcomes in those who have been on ventilators. And Dr. Powers is with us today to discuss the topic of exercise during the pandemic, everything from the consequences of not getting enough of it, enough exercise, or maybe any exercise, as well as the benefits of exercise to reduce your risk of COVID and also recover faster if you do contract this virus or any other virus for that matter. And we welcome him to the Dr. Health Radio microphones this morning. Good morning, Dr. Powers. How the health are you?
Oh, I'm very good. thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thanks so much for being there and doing what you do, all the research that you've done over your career. It's quite impressive. Now, let's start. I want to start on a lighter note since we're going to be delving into a heavy topic. Whenever anybody talks about the pandemic, it's usually heavy. But since one of your areas of expertise is obviously the study of muscles because you're an exercise physiologist, here's a question for you. What is the only muscle in the body that can touch itself?
Well, obviously, I should know this.
Sorry.
I'm going to ask, no, I don't know.
Don't ask Dr. Google. No cheating now. No. I know the answer is probably at the tip of your tongue, right? I'm giving you a hint. It is the tongue.
Yeah, right. Tongue muscle. Yeah.
The tongue muscle. Yeah. Anyway, but let's cover exercise and how it affects our risk of either not getting the COVID-19 virus or if we do get it, if we engage in enough exercise, it mitigates some of the consequences or side effects or adverse effects of the virus itself, but other viruses in general, not just COVID. I want to talk about how exercise is antiviral, and exercise is medicine as much as any pill or potion or shot or injection is. But let's set the stage for us, if you will, and talk about your research. And I know that I mentioned at the outset that you actually were instrumental in developing patient outcomes for those who have been on ventilators as a result of COVID. Tell us about that study.
Yeah, and of course, mechanical ventilation is a clinical tool to allow people that can't adequately breathe on their own to achieve adequate gas exchange. And there's a wide variety of conditions that may require people to be put on a ventilator. Of course, acute exacerbation of chronic obstructive lung disease, almost any critical illness, including infections such as COVID, may render the patient unable to breathe adequately on their own. Mm-hmm. And while mechanical ventilation is a life-saving intervention for these kind of patients, an unintended consequence of long-term prolonged mechanical ventilation is the development of inspiratory muscle weakness. And that's significant because one of the really horrendous outcomes of prolonged or potential outcomes of prolonged mechanical ventilation is the inability to wean the patient from the ventilator. And weak inspiratory muscles likely play a major role in that problem. And so I became fascinated with this over 20 years ago, and my research was designed to, first to try to understand why mechanistically inspiratory muscles waste so quickly when exposed to prolonged inactivity, much faster than limb muscle, which is surprising in itself. But by understanding the mechanisms of why that happens, I wanted, of course, to develop a therapeutic intervention to try to protect.
Mm-hmm. And what was that intervention, if you could give us some details?
Yeah, indeed. And so basically, to boil it down in a very simplistic nutshell, is that the size and health of any skeletal muscle is due to an interplay between the rates of protein synthesis in the muscle fiber and the rates of breaking down those proteins. When a patient is put on prolonged mechanical ventilation, protein synthesis in inspiratory muscles and the principal inspiratory muscle in humans and all other mammals is a muscle called the diaphragm. And this is this thin dome-shaped muscle that separates the thoracic cavity from the abdominal cavity. And this muscle wastes very quickly during mechanical ventilation because protein synthesis is depressed and there's a large increase in the rate of protein breakdown. And this appears to be largely linked to an increase in something that's called oxidative stress. There's an increased production of free radicals, mitochondria, which are the powerhouse of the cell to produce energy, are damaged. They, in turn, start to dysfunction, produce less ATP to produce more radicals. And so by working through these chains over 20 years of looking at these signaling events, we've come up with ideas how to protect mitochondria, and some of them involve using molecules that are mitochondrial-targeted antioxidants that the patient can actually take. It can be injected or it could be given orally if the patient was lucid and wasn't intubated with a a trach tube.
Mm-hmm.
But most likely this would be given probably IV.
I see. Okay. And would one of those be ribose? That's the first thing that comes to mind when I think mitochondria and muscles. But is that one that you have in your arsenal?
No, actually, this molecule is a unique molecule. It's only made up of four amino acids. It's not necessarily a scavenger per se. I mean, antioxidants can come in many forms.
Mm-hmm.
And the definition of an antioxidant is simply anything that reduces the rates of oxidation. And it actually does so by protecting mitochondria from this inactivity-induced damage such that mitochondria produce fewer radicals to cause the problem rather than trying to scavenge the radical.
Mm. So is that a pharmaceutical or a nutritional?
So it is owned by a drug company, of course, and it's undergone clinical trials. It is currently under consideration for approval for a specific mitochondrial disorder. The goal is, of course, to get it approved for FDA use. To my knowledge, it is not currently approved, but this is only one of many. Mitochondrial targeted antioxidants have actually been the holy grail of free radical biology for a very, very long time. Many, many groups are working on this. There are a number of approaches that may be effective. This is simply one of them.
Okay. All right. Now we need to take a break in just a matter of seconds, but when we come back, Dr. Powers, I want to ask you about how exercise influences the immune system in a positive way. And then you can tell us what happens when COVID-19 patients have to resort to the mechanical ventilation while in the ICU. We'll talk about that. And then many of us who have had the virus, well, I haven't, but many who have out there, as well as the rest of us, what is the ramifications of exercise, whether you have had it or not, and the recovery rates. We'll talk about the percentages of fit individuals versus somebody that is sedentary or out of shape. Back after this with more information on your good health here on Dr. Health with my guest, Dr. Scott Powers, an exercise physiologist from Stetson University. We'll be back with much more information right after this as the Healthiest Hour on Radio continues.
That makes you you. Where did you get that confidence that lets you look like you do? Oh, what a look. Yes, you're looking good. You take care of your teeth just like you should. Where did you get that smile, the one that belongs to you? Nothing looks so right than a smile that's so bright. Tell me, smile. You can smile so beautifully. Beautiful smiles are a specialty. Where did you get that smile? Beautiful smiles from Dr. Dennis Nagata.
Mom, can I have some Spray?
Sure, honey.
Thanks, Mom.
You know what that is? That's the sound of my child thanking me for giving her something that's actually good for her teeth. Spry Gum is part of the Spry Dental Defense System, a complete line of oral care products made with 100% xylitol, the all-natural sweetener with proven dental benefits. So when we're at home, my whole family uses Spry toothpaste and mouthwash to help strengthen our teeth and reduce the risk of tooth decay. And when we're on the go, I just throw some Spry Gum and mints right into my bag. My kids love it, and I love that it's all natural. No sugar, no aspartame, or any other chemicals. Just think of that. I reward my kids for taking care of their teeth at home by giving them gum and mints on the go that are good for their teeth. Visit SpryDental.com or ask for Spry by name at your local health food store. You can also ask your dentist about Spry and make sure your mouth is receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
At Vitamin Shoppe, Sprouts, Kroger, and most natural product retailers. Find a retailer near you at clear.com.
Snow.
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 That's right, it is. David Snow on your radio. Welcome back to the Cure for the Common radio show.
Snow.
Here, where we talk about issues important to your well-being, and to have a well-being, to be a well person, you have to be in shape. Well, I know round is a shape, but that's not the shape you want to be in, okay? Let's cover exercise with our guest. If you're just joining us, Dr. Scott Powers is with us, an exercise physiologist. Now, Dr. Powers, let's cover exercise and how it affects our risk of not only contracting COVID, the COVID-19 virus, but other viruses in general, being that this is, we're getting into cold and flu season in the winter months when people are going to be, you know, there's a higher percentage of people with infectious diseases that are going to be out and about. And so that's, it's more important than ever at this time of the year to know about this, if you could bring us up to speed on that.
Yeah, so the relationship between physical activity and the risk of upper respiratory tract infections, such as the cold, can be described like a J-shaped curve. So people that are sedentary are typically described as having the average risk for developing an upper respiratory tract infection, whereas people that engage in regular exercise, moderate intensity, at least 150 minutes a week, have a reduced risk by a significant amount. People debate the exact amount of improvement, but it's significantly improved compared to sedentary individuals.
Mm-hmm.
On the far end of the J-shaped curve, however, is that people that perform too much exercise, exhaustive exercise, perhaps don't get enough rest, they may actually blunt their immune system's response,
right,
and they may have a slightly higher risk than someone that's even sedentary.
Mm-hmm.
But no question about it, the risk of developing an upper respiratory tract infection is lower in people that engage in regular physical activity, and that's defined as people that do at least 150 minutes a week of moderate to higher intensity activity.
All right. So would that include exercising caution and pushing my luck, or jumping to conclusions? I'm just kidding.
But no, I understand.
a lot of people are just, you know, they give it, rationalizing and justifying their need to be sedentary. I mean, you know, they have too much work to do, or the kids are needing attention, or, you know, there's just a whole host of excuses. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and he was saying that, you know, he's very matter-of-fact admitting that he's been lazy and getting back into shape because he lifted weights most of his life, but then he had a shoulder injury, frozen shoulder, adhesive capsulitis, and so that he got out of the routine, you know, and he said that he really needs to get back into it. And I mentioned to him, yes, I also, you know, we all have motivation issues when it comes to being consistent with our exercise. And I remember years ago here in Hawaii, where we broadcast from, there's Kapi'olani Park, which is where I used to work out. And I had parked my car in front of the tennis courts there, and it was at night. And I thought, oh, you know, I don't feel like doing it. I'm just going to get back in the car and go home. I'm just not feeling up to it in this. And I happened to glance over at the tennis courts, and here's two guys in wheelchairs playing tennis, in wheelchairs. And so I thought, you know, David, you have no excuse to, I mean, and ever since then, I mean, it really drove the point home that, hey, you know, and we recently had on a paraplegic as a guest here on Dr. Health Radio, and he swims every day. He has assistance, granted, but he doesn't make it a limiting, you know, a liability in his lifestyle. I mean, he does it in spite of what he's gone through. And so, I mean, everybody, you can always do something. You know, I always say that movement is like money. A little is better than none. More is better than less. And so, anyway, how did you, by the way, get interested in the field of exercise physiology initially?
Well, I was a mediocre college distance runner, and I wanted to understand the biology of why people could beat me. And so I became fascinated with studying exercise physiology.
Oh, interesting. Oh, you're a runner. Okay. All right. So let's talk about what happens exactly when COVID-19 patients have to resort to mechanical ventilation while they're in the ICU. What goes on, and is there anything they can do exercise-wise or maybe breathing methods or procedures to minimize the effect of the ventilation, as you were talking about how it so drastically and quickly causes the muscles of the diaphragm to atrophy?
So unfortunately, no. If they're put on a mechanical ventilator, the ventilator does all the work of breathing.
Yeah, right.
However, there are different modes of the way you can set the ventilator such that you can allow the patient to trigger the breath, that is, their inspiratory muscles to actually start the inspiration. The ventilator kicks in and simply provides additional assistance to allow them to actually reach the kind of breath level that's going to maintain adequate gas exchange. There's other people that have been working on ways to perhaps stimulate the diaphragm to contract mechanically, electrically, in the ICU so that patients could indeed, with this electrical stimulation, be able to maintain adequate gas exchange. This only works in some of the healthiest of patients, and there are many, many contraindications to this kind of problem. And so many, many patients, unfortunately, will have to continue to be ventilated with what we refer to as a positive pressure ventilator. Mm-hmm. That is, a ventilator that pushes the air into the lungs, as opposed to the old iron lung that was used, of course, during the polio epidemic.
Yeah, I do remember that. Now, for those of us who may have had the virus or the rest of us who have been isolated as a result of the virus, what tips can you give us to become more active again now that society is somewhat being less restrictive and, you know, things are opening up than, say, they were a year ago? What are some of the guidelines that you give your patients or your students in that regard?
Yeah, so, you know, when you think about motivation to continue to exercise, I think that if you simply look at how powerful the evidence is that regular exercise reduces, it's the only health intervention that's ever been shown to reduce all-cause mortality. Mm-hmm. And the remarkable thing is that, you know, of course, it's been shown to reduce a whole host of chronic diseases,
right.
26 to be exact.
Wow.
I mean, psychiatric disorders, neurological disorders, metabolic diseases such as obesity, type 2 diabetes, of course, cardiovascular diseases, coronary heart disease, hypertension, heart failure, and even pulmonary diseases and disorders, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a paper recently that was just published from a group in California. The first author was Dr. Robert Salas, who is a really well-known sports medicine physician and was one of the architects of actually creating the mantra of exercise as medicine for the American College of Sports Medicine in 2007.
Hmm.
And Dr. Salas did a study, a retrospective study on 48,000 patients that were treated in the Kaiser Permanente Medical Center in California.
Yes.
And these were patients that had been a positive COVID diagnosis. And he looked at the relationship between their levels of physical activity and their risk of hospitalization and or death from COVID. The results were absolutely overwhelming that the vast majority of these patients that were hospitalized and actually died were patients that had been sedentary prior to contracting COVID.
So not the only obesity, it's the sedentary lifestyle in addition to the obesity. And of course, the sedentary lifestyle probably caused the obesity, but it's the two can't be separated.
No, and I think that, you know, this kind of data is this really powerful motivation for us.
Yeah,
is real. And physical activity, you know, really reduced the incidence of patients being admitted to the ICU, even though they contracted COVID. I mean, exercise is not a panacea.
Right.
You can still get ill from the virus if you're exposed to a significant load of COVID-19, this particular type of SARS-2 virus. But your chances of dying or being admitted into the intensive care unit are markedly lower if you're physically active.
Right. And then, of course, there's the pandemic pound, since we're talking about obesity, the COVID-15 or the COVID-29 or the COVID-50, depending on how much weight one has gained from from the pandemic lifestyle, which is was a sedentary lifestyle because everybody was isolated or locked up.
Yep.
Or they stayed closed in. So I think that's a good segue into talking about sarcopenia, which is muscle wasting now, either from disease or aging or the sedentary lifestyle. What are some of the best ways of preventing this degenerative condition? Is it just exercise, or is it just, or is it a combination of that and diet, or what has your research found on that?
Yeah, and so let's define for your audience sarcopenia, which it literally means a loss of flesh, but it's typically associated with age-related loss of skeletal muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And what studies have shown is that the type of exercise that has the greatest positive restorative effect for skeletal muscle, of course, is resistance exercise.
Yes, right.
However, endurance exercise may well be important as well because it maintains health of mitochondria that may likely play a role in sarcopenia. And sarcopenia, by the way, there's not one specific cause. It appears to be a multifactorial kind of disorder that many things can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly regular resistance exercise is likely important. I would argue that endurance exercise may prove to be important as well. But nutrition is also incredibly important with this as well, because in order to produce proteins as a result of an exercise bout, one has to have available all of the essential amino acids in the cell.
Right.
And this likely requires you to consume a high-quality protein meal multiple times a day to ensure that after the exercise, you get the full benefit, that the exercise stimulation of the protein synthesis to make your contractile proteins actually occurs and is not limited because of a lack of a key amino acid.
Mm-hmm. Now, Doctor, what about the fact of, you know, they talk about the one-hour window and that you should get protein within an hour of resistance exercises or engaging in some kind of resistance exercise or workout. You know, there's a window of a half hour to an hour and a half or so. And then other studies I've seen say that, no, it doesn't really matter. You just spread out your protein over at least three different periods over a day's period of time. And so what has your research uncovered on that? Is it better to eat protein, consume some protein right after a workout, or can you just wait until the next meal?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that if you look at the time course of the increase in protein synthesis after a resistance training bout, you would argue that you probably would be best served to get a bolus dose of a high-quality protein just before the workout or right after, but you should continue this over the next 24 to 48 hours.
Oh.
Simply because if you look at the time course of the elevation in protein synthesis after a single resistance training workout, it may last in some individuals 36 to 48 hours.
Oh, and that's why they say to only exercise every other day for those particular muscle groups, because it takes, 24 to 48 hours to rebuild the muscle tears or the damage that you've done to those muscle cells, and that's what rebuilds the muscle and causes muscle growth or hypertrophy.
Yeah, so, you know, you may not necessarily damage muscles each time you work out, but certainly if you do resistance exercise of any description, it can be really high repetition or heavy weight, low repetition. Regardless, you're going to stimulate protein synthesis
mm-hmm.
to make contractile proteins, and that process needs a continuous supply of those essential amino acids, those that, you know, the body cannot synthesize.
Right.
And of course, we get those from the foods that we consume.
Mm-hmm. Or protein supplements. I mean, if somebody doesn't have enough protein in their diet.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, milk quality proteins, it's long been argued that this is just an excellent source of a high quality protein.
Right.
And this is not just during the time that you work out. I think you can make a logical physiological argument that you should consume protein, high-quality protein, multiple times a day.
Yes.
To make sure that mm-hmm. as protein synthesis, it doesn't just stop right after the workout.
Right.
This goes on for, you know, possibly 2 days.
Yeah, yeah. And so don't eat the you know, the donuts and danishes in the morning for breakfast, and then maybe just a quick sandwich or something for lunch, and then a big steak for dinner. You want to spread out that protein a little more equally, right, over a period of, over the time of a day.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've seen arguments, logical arguments, and it's hard to do this experiment to demonstrate whether this is essential or not. But I've seen arguments from people that study in detail muscle protein synthesis that make the argument that one should consume high-quality protein before you go to bed, simply because that if you're asleep for 6, 8, 10 hours, whatever your sleep period is, that somewhere over that time period, you may actually, in some cells in the body, deplete those essential amino acids, and therefore protein synthesis would not be able to continue at the rate that it's prescribed for without those amino acids being available.
Well, that's good information. Dr. Powers, we need to take one last break of the hour. And when we come back, I have many more questions for you about exercise and how it affects our health and susceptibility to infection and disease. My guest, if you're just joining us, Dr. Scott Powers, whose research has appeared in some 60 peer-reviewed publications under the topic of exercise physiology, and he also published a textbook in exercise physiology that's been translated into 8 languages. So very credentialed guest that we have on today. Back after this with much more information for your good health. So stick around if you want to stay healthy. I'm David Snow here on Dr. Health Radio.
Noni has been used by Polynesians and Hawaiians for over 2,000 years as their main medicinal plant. Now our new products bring the power of Noni fruit to you in a pleasant-to-use form. Noni fruit leather is made from pure, organic, unfermented fruit and offers relief for many health problems inside and out. Our soothing lavender Noni lotion helps with pain, skin ailments, and sports injuries. Noni fruit leather and lavender Noni lotion are available online or at most health food stores. Try our Noni lotion and fruit leather for improved health and energy.
Dr. Health Radio is made possible by Master Supplements, the makers of Ferrelac, America's fastest acting medical strength patented probiotic. See why their regular customers become, well, regular customers by going to Theralac.com. And brought to you by Noni Fruit Leather and Noni Lavender Lotion. Discover the external and internal healing power of Noni by checking out RealNoni.com.
Since 70% of your immune system is in your gut, don't you think it's time to take a little better care of it? After all, so many things you're doing to it are affecting its function. Not getting enough fiber, eating too much sugar, excess stress and alcohol, as well as that sedentary lifestyle. So maybe it's time for a tune-up. An intestinal tune-up with the medical strength probiotics from Master Supplements. Their signature Theralac, recommended by doctors for more than 15 years, will rapidly colonize your intestinal tract with the specific gut-friendly strains of potent beneficial bacteria. And their patent-protected delivery system has garnered Theralac and their other probiotics with a worldwide reputation for results. There's also TruFlora, a unique probiotic and enzyme blend with bio-cleansing effects. And TruBifido, specifically formulated for colon support. See all of the Master Supplements products at your nearest natural food store or go to Ferrelac.com. Master Supplements, the probiotic pioneers.
Curcumin-rich Theracurmin from Natural Factors is a special form of curcumin, the yellow pigment of turmeric that has shown many wondrous health benefits. Theracurmin represents a major scientific breakthrough. Clinical studies show that when it comes to absorption, Theracurmin is by far number one. Finally, the powerful health benefits of curcumin can be realized with curcumin-rich Theracurmin. To learn more, visit naturalfactors.com.
Welcome back to The Cure for the Common radio show. David Snow on your radio. A reminder, our show does rebroadcast tonight at 9 p.m. on the station you're listening to right now, or you can go to the website, drhealthradio.com, next Wednesday, and hear this show again on our podcast section of the website, which is drhealthradio.com. That's D-O-C-T-O-R, healthradio.com. If you're just joining us, Dr. Scott Powers is with us. He is an exercise physiologist, and we're talking about exercise as it relates to the pandemic, everything from the consequences of not getting enough of it or the benefits of exercise to reduce your risk of COVID as well as other infections. You know, I got to tell you, unfortunately, I've been kind of depressed lately, Dr. Powers. Yeah, I was thinking back when I used to have abs, and nowadays all I have is abnormalities. But anyway, that's another program. But what about, speaking of abs, you know, everyone wants those visible six-pack abs, right? And I'm talking to you as an exercise physiologist. You see the male and female bodies on the magazine covers. Well, one way I always recommend that people, if they want those kind of abs to be more visible, they have to make those six-packs of soda and beer less visible by not drinking them. So what are some of your tips for the vanity muscles? You know, people want their abs to show, and of course the guys want their big guns, their biceps to bulge from their t-shirts or whatever. Give us some tips on people out there who are vain, like most of the population.
Well, of course, to have visible abdominal muscles, one needs to have a low density of subcutaneous body fat.
That's right.
In the stomach. And that's, of course, a balance between the energy that we consume and the energy that we expend. The first law of thermodynamics has never been disproven, that if we consume more energy than we expend, we wind up storing that energy. And since we really only have two ways to store energy in the body, carbohydrates can be stored in the form of blood glucose or a solid form of carbohydrates called glycogen. But that's a very limited storage capacity, and by far, of course, the largest storage capacity that we have in the body for energy is triglycerides found in fat cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so more than likely, if you consume more energy than you expend, and it doesn't matter what macronutrient that you use to have this positive caloric balance, it's very likely going to be stored in fat cells.
Yeah.
Where it's stored is determined by a variety of factors, largely genetic, but of course much of it in males, unfortunately, is in the abdominal section.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the only way to see those visible abs, of course, is to reduce that subcutaneous fat in your abdominal.
And I've read where it's you have to have 10% fat or less as far as body fat composition for the abs to be visible. Is that correct?
Well, I think it depends on where the fat's stored. You know,
You
see individuals that it's pretty rare, actually, for, you know, 10% or below would be, you know, an endurance athlete, male endurance athlete.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us don't ever reach that. But you can see visible abs in people that have percent body fats around 20.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
They don't have a large disposition of fat in the subcutaneous area, in the stomach area.
So it is true that abs are built in the kitchen. I mean, it's diet more than it is exercise, right?
I mean, well, no question. Yeah. And of course, strengthening those abdominal muscles by doing crunches and things that cause them to be active, of course, will make them more pronounced because they're just like any other muscle in the body.
That's
they can
right.
get larger in hypertrophy.
Although there's no such thing as spot reducing. You're not going to reduce fat in that area selectively by doing, you know, 1,000 crunches or sit-ups or something like that. Like you said, it depends on the distribution of fat in the body, and you're going to burn fat all the way around. You can't really spot reduce, right? Is that correct?
No, and there's not good evidence for spot reduction
right.
at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, now what about since I don't want to run out of time before I run am able to ask you this question, and that is, what is your opinion as an exercise physiologist on all these electronic devices, everything from Fitbits, Apple Watches to, you know, there's the standing belt vibrators, you know, that are supposed to enhance muscle tone and everything, and then myoelectric shock, you know, the little prods or the sensors or the sticks that you put on with the wires to your abdominal area, and you know, that pulsate, give you mild electric jolts to the muscles. So, well, you know, I'm just using those as a few examples, but there are many other devices and, you know, different gimmicks out there. But do any of them work, or are they all pretty much just marketing?
Well, let's
marketing?
Talk about the two big categories that you mentioned there, and activity monitors like Fitbits or the Garmin device. You know, those devices are fine if they motivate you to be active.
Yeah,
and
right.
You know, I know people that they actually encourage, I believe, to actually be more active because
sure.
they count their steps and they want those 10,000 steps a day that appears to be very desirable.
Uh-huh.
So those appear to be very useful. You can't, however, think because you're getting a little more activity that you can increase your intake of energy a huge amount as
That's
well.
Right.
Because
yeah.
when you look at it in reality, the amount of voluntary physical activity caloric expenditure every day
mm-hmm.
is not gigantic for most of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And so having a few Cokes and a few beers and a donut or two, of course, and you can consume far more energy from that than you probably most of us expend, even if you're physically active.
Yeah, you'd have to run a marathon a week to cancel out the calories that most people consume just as exceptions to the rule. Oh, I'll just have that extra helping of, you know, dessert or this and that. And they don't realize that just how much energy it takes or exercise it takes to burn those amount of calories, you know, the couple hundred extra calories that they're consuming.
Exactly. And most of us, you know, don't expend more than 5 to 10 calories a minute during exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do the math. You know, you exercise for 30 minutes and you're only expending 10 calories a minute, then you've expended 300 kilocalories, and a couple beers, of course, that's all back.
Yeah, right. You know, and you talked about resistance exercise earlier, Dr. Powers. The problem is most people are resistant to exercise. They don't engage
Indeed.
In enough resistant exercises. Hey, I can't thank you enough. I already want to invite you back next year, maybe for New Year's fitness resolutions or shortly thereafter, maybe early next in the spring or of course, May is Physical Fitness and Sports Month. Maybe we can have you on next year in 2022 for that particular segment. But definitely want you back, Dr. Powers. Thank you so much for all the information, very valuable insights and information that you've shared with us, our radio listeners here this morning. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, David, thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you and your listening audience, and I look forward to the next time.
All right. Well, that's a date. All right. There goes Dr. Scott Powers. Oh, Dr. Powers, also, is there a website people can go to if they want more information as far as your research?
Actually, you know, they can do a Google Scholar search.
Okay.
Powers, S-K, and they can find our papers there.
Okay, great.
It's a free search engine.
Excellent. Good. Okay, and just Google Dr. Scott Powers. Thank you so much, Dr. Powers.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's it for the show. Thank you for listening out there in Radio Land. Join us again next week, same time, same station. Oh, I should mention tonight, our rebroadcast of the morning show at 9 p.m. So 9 a.m. is a fresh show. 9 p.m. is the rebroadcast of the morning show. And always go to the website, drhealthradio.com, drhealthradio.com. Thanks so much. I'm David Snow reminding you that it isn't how long you live, it's how you live long. Aloha. Have a healthy week.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.